Okay, tonight we're going to continue in the world of Hilchos Borer and Hilchos Shabbos. And this is the third shiur in Hilchos Borer. Hopefully we'll have tonight and probably one more, and that'll round out Hilchos Borer with four shiurim, okay? So we discussed previously about some of the backgrounds to Hilchos Borer, right? Miyad, biyad, l'achila, right? It has to be for immediate usage by taking it with your hand and for your eating and not to throw away. Okay, we discussed last week and the week before some of the definitions, what would be considered a tarovet, what type of mixtures are we talking about, one type of food that has different flavorings, two different types of food that are, right, what about when, you know, an apple and an orange, what about when they're all in one plate, big pieces or small pieces, different layers, things of that nature. We have discussed over the past few weeks. Tonight we're going to open off with the third criteria of the biyad, miyad, l'achila definitions, and that is the miyad. Right? If I say that we have a requirement of miyad that it's for your quote unquote.
I might turn the lights off, I apologize. We're not here. Only
so the question we want to discuss tonight is what is the definition of miyad? What is going to be for immediate usage? Right? We've discussed a little bit what the definition of l'achila would be as opposed to taking away the psola, right? Taking the good from the bad. We've discussed a little bit about the biyad, which we'll discuss more a little bit. Right now, I want to mainly focus on what is the definition of miyad. What would you say? If you were discussing, if I said it needs to be for, quote-unquote, immediate usage, miyad, how would you define that?
Before the meal.
Is there a time period, or when you say before the meal, does that mean, you know, 3 hours before, 2 hours before, 10 minutes before? Okay.
So like maybe 2-3 hours.
Okay. I hear that. What would you say? Anyone else with any thoughts? Definition of miyad.
Next year?
Yeah, as in, okay, so right, it has to be like next to the meal. What's next to the meal mean? Can you like quantify that in like numbers? Well, here it would be time as opposed to distance, but yeah.
Like immediately.
That's the question. How far do I take immediate?
So I think 3 minutes at most, or like.
Okay, so you're gonna say like a half hour before the meal. That's considered for the meal. More than a half hour before, it's kind of like that's not for now.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a very very big debate in the Rishonim. I brought for you guys the Beit Yosef and Shin Yotet. Aleph, and Bet, and Gimel, but I summed it up in a little bit of in a chart on the Mar Makomo sheet, and there's really four opinions in the Rishonim, but there's three different understandings of Rabbeinu Yerucham, so really we're going to have six opinions in how to understand the Rishonim for the definition of the phrase Miyad. So the first opinion is Rabbeinu Chananel, the Rosh, and the Ran, that it is the heter of Brera is going to be anything that's needed for the upcoming meal. Right? The next meal. So that means anything Shabbos morning, l'chora, would be good through lunch. But I can't Shabbos morning get up and do borer that's going to apply for Shalosh Shedes. That would be that opinion. Okay? Second opinion, and this is the first, this is the Rabbeinu Yerucham, Alpida Beit Yosef, and the Levush, their understanding of Rabbeinu Yerucham, is that anything for that specific meal, right? But not for another meal or later in the day, right? That would be very different, right? The nafkamina between Rabbeinu Yerucham, Alpi the Beit Yosef, and the Levush, is they're going to say, so long as I finished lunch, I could not do Shalosh Shedes. Whereas, in seemingly for Rabbeinu Chananel, the Rosh, and the Ran, even though it's a few hours away, if that's the coming meal, it would be acceptable. Third opinion is Rabbeinu Yerucham, according to the Drisha, right? Drisha, Prisha, the Sma, right? Author of a lot of really incredible works on the Torah and Shulchan Aruch. He understands Rabbeinu Yerucham differently. He says, no. Rabbeinu Yerucham means it's mutter to do borer before the, really, samuch l'suda mamish, or during the meal. If it's like the minutes before the suda, or like you're sitting at the table, then borer is okay. Right? He takes a very different read of Rabbeinu Yerucham. He's like, let's go through the Shiddush Rishon, and then we'll take the question. Then the third Rabbeinu Yerucham is the Rabbeinu Yerucham, according to the Machzir HaShekel, who says, no, there's like a three to four hour window. Right? 3 to 4 hours before the meal, that's called like preparation for the meal. But more than 3 to 4 hours, that's already like way too far. The Mordechai says that it's much better to do breira only within a meal, an hour of the meal. Right? Within an hour of the meal, the Mordechai would say, that's called like preparation for the meal. But once you're like an hour, you know, who prepares for a meal more than an hour before the meal, especially when you factor in like, we're not cooking, right? It's Shabbos. You can't cook. It's not like how long does it take me to cook the meal and set the table. It's like, how long does it take to put everything on serving plates and to set the table and do what you need to like prepare the meal means to set it up, right? Not including the cooking period. The last opinion in the Rishonim is going to be the opinion of the Rambam. The Rambam breaks it up into a Mutter, Asar Midar Rabban, and Asar Midioraita. The Rambam takes it as a three steps, right? Immediate usage is Mutter. Anything that's going to be for later in the day, such as Shacharit time to the afternoon, that's going to be an Asar Midioraita. And anything that's like 1 to 3 hours is going to be Asar Midar Rabban. So it seems to me the Rambam would say the Hetzer is really less than an hour is going to be the definition of Miyad. So those are our six general ideas amongst the Rishonim. Yeah. So that's a great question. We're going to discuss that later on in right? It's later on in the Maror Kol Mashir. What happens if I prepare what I need and I don't eat it all? Am I allowed to eat that which I was borer on Shabbos for later on in the day? Or do I have to wait till Motei Shabbos on Shir Kadesh Shiyasu? I have to wait. Let's say it would take me 10 minutes on Motei Shabbos, right? The whole sugi on Shinir Chet Aleph of Maisa Shabbos, something that was done on Shabbos. Can I benefit from it or not on Shabbos? So that's going to be part of the discussion. So you're going to ask the question. What if I sorted 150 grams of peanuts and cashews, and I only ate 100 of them? Can I eat the other 50 on Shabbos afternoon, or do I have to wait till Motei Shabbos, Shir Kadesh Shiyasu, so let's say that's 5 minutes, or 10 minutes, whatever long it would take you to have done the borer, and only then it would be permissible? So that there's a discussion that if it was something, the general opinion, we'll see this later, is if it's something that you were doing to... Right, that's what was necessary for the meal because of the amount of guests you were, the amount of people. It would have been normal to eat 150 grams. That's fine. But if you knew it's really just you and your friend, right? You and Brooke were having lunch together, and you and Brooke are not going to eat half a kilo of peanuts together because that's like a little bit crazy.
If we overestimate, like, I don't know, there's a peanut eating challenge. Who will win?
Ah, so that there's a discussion. I asked this question. I remember when I first learned Hilchos Borer, I asked Batat this question when we were learning it. And I said, well, I asked the question, right? If let's say I'm having guests, right? Let's say we're having people over. I don't even know what it means to have a guest for a Shabbos meal anymore. But let's assume there's this concept called having guests over at a Shabbos meal. We haven't been Zohar to have host guests for a Shabbos meal since, I don't even know when. Long before Purim. Whatever. It's a moot topic, I guess. But point is, so let's say there's six people at the table, and we assume, let's say, everyone's going to have a handful of peanuts. So let's say that equals six handfuls worth of peanuts. But you want to have a little bit extra because it's like, it's not mechubat, like, okay, you get eight peanuts, and you get eight peanuts, and you get eight peanuts.
I have a death wish. That's why I'm taking peanuts.
Ah, okay, so we'll change to cashews? I don't know. Great, no. That's just like nuts are the classic example that we've been using. Great. It's all part of our plan.
Yeah.
You guys
are plotting against me.
Yeah, that's been exactly.
You can keep saying peanuts.
So if you were to have like an allotted explicit amount, that's like a little bit like, you know, miserish. It's a little bit like not like it's going to make people uncomfortable. Can I do more that's within reason to have a mechubad amount at the table? So instead of everyone getting one handful, I made two handfuls for everyone. So someone can take seconds, but not everyone's going to take seconds. And it doesn't look like the dish is mamish empty. So Rav Batat thought that would be called tzarchei asuda because it's to make sure the table looks nice and normal, not like everyone gets an explicit amount of like their eight peanuts. Rav Batat thought that definitely if it was within reason, it's not like you just made 20, you just went through a 20 kilo bag of mixed nuts to prepare for your six person meal, that would be absurd. But to put out a little, you know, more than you would need, but within reason, that's called tzarchei asuda because that's part of kavod orchim, making sure that the table looks normal, right? I'm sure everyone here has been to like that meal where like there's exactly like one pulki for every person at the table, and then everyone just feels awkward. Okay? So Rabbi Tata wanted to say, because of that like awkward feeling, you're just like, that's really awkward and awful and it's just uncomfortable for everybody. So Rabbi Tata said, because of that feeling, even if you wouldn't necessarily take the second polki, but the fact that there's nothing there for anyone who would want, that makes them feel uncomfortable. He thought that would be the definition of Sarkei Suda. But yeah, that, I remember I asked that question a few years ago. Thank you. I forgot about it. It definitely jogged my memory of that. Thank you. I mean, the whole seminary is like a solid, what, 15 people?
Yeah, 17. It's more than just me and Brooke.
Right, we're going to get there. There's an Igros Moshe that asked that question. We're going to get that in a few minutes.
So, there's a lot of people. And you have all these nuts to sort through. And it's
going
to take you more than
3 or 4 hours. We're going to get to that. The Igros Moshe asked that question. Yeah, that's on the Makoro sheet. So these are our six opinions on... You're like OCD and you want to separate the Skittles to one of these like obsessive videos that people post of like all the different colored M&Ms are in perfect lines of different colors.
Hey, I think that's perfectly within the spectrum of normal.
Okay, I mean, the definition spectrum could go as wide as we want here. That's part of the definition of the word spectrum.
Did we like just determine what different is in terms of like how different is different and what makes it different?
Yeah, we discussed that last week.
How...
Okay. What's your question? As we discussed last week, the differences between things that are big or small versus things that are different flavorings.
Small is the same.
We generally assume that big and small, we'd say, is it going to be okay, right? Let's say big piece of schnitzel versus small. But different flavorings were makbid on. It's also the litmus test, as we discussed, that's the easiest way to remember it, is as Rav Zander writes in the Mishnah of Shabbat, is if you look at it, if you take a quick glance at it, does it look like it's mixed together or it's separate? So when you look at one big bowl of your mixed M&Ms and all the colors, they're mixed together, that would be a tairovet. But if you look at you have one plate and on the plate there's one apple and one orange, that doesn't look like a tairovet. That is two distinctively separate things. But if you have like one of these huge giant fruit bowls, when you take a quick glance at it, you just see a bowl of fruit. You don't see orange, apple, banana, peach, right? So it's kind of this litmus test, as the way he puts it, is if you were to take a quick glance at it, then what sticks out? What jumps to mind? That I always found to me is I think the best definition. A part of it is, well, as this question is your question before about the size of the meal, there's a lot of this that's subjective, right? You define what's called psolet, what's called ochel, right? For you, you want the peanuts from the nut mixture. For Brooke, she wants to be nowhere near the peanuts. So what's ochel for you is murderous and psolet for her. Okay? So there's an inherent subjectivity here, and that's going to for sure factor in, and some of it also is going to be to the atayin. What's going to be normal for you? What are you used to? That's definitely going to factor in. Okay. Okay.
So actually, it's all one.
Okay, but you have no way of knowing that.
But you know.
Dum Dum
is infamous for mislabeling their apple as grape.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
yes.
I made that up.
Well,
what's the question?
I was so
excited to that. Different? Because it's just the outside, and it's the inside that matters.
That's a question of just, that's a question of like, you. If you didn't know, or you did know, but you couldn't, but here, you couldn't then.
You don't know for sure, but there's a solid chance.
The question's not so shocking, because if your goal is to take the grape, so you go in, you take the grape, you eat it, that's mutter. If your goal is I want the grape, so I'm going to take out every single apple of the huge 5-pound box from Costco to take the one grape, then you should probably, re-examine your usage of time, because that sounds like completely unnecessary, and I would, no, it sounds like I would drive myself crazy doing that. But as in, that just doesn't seem productive. So I don't fully see where the question would come up, but that's kind of just in general. Okay, so Shulchan Aruch Paskins, like the Rambam, and he says that, really, he brings these different definitions. If you were to use it immediately, that would be mutter. But if you're doing Breira for the afternoon, you would say that's a Chiyuv D'Oraita. That's really the Shulchan Aruch discusses. And the Ramah, though, paskins like the Rov Rishonim, that it mashaborer litzorech oto suda shemisaviv ba miyad mikre l'altar. Right? When you're doing something for the immediate and upcoming meal, that is going to be acceptable. It's not necessarily a time-bound issue. It's the coming meal. What is normal for the coming meal? Let's go through the Makorah and see if some of the answers to the questions will be answered, okay? And we'll ask, at the end of each segi, we'll try and address the questions. So that's the Shulchan Aruch is really saying, immediate is mutter, anything for later in the day is going to be aser. And the Ramah is going to say it's the coming Suda that's going to be considered immediate. The Mishnah Berurah writes that what if the meal is going to be in a long time? Can you do borer from meal to meal? Right? I finished my suda Friday night. Can I start to do borer for lunch? That's the next meal.
But if I say...
Let's say you finish dinner at 9:30
p.m.
No. And lunch is going to be at 10:30 a.m.
Yeah.
But that's the coming meal. For some of the Rishonim, I could argue that that would be mutter.
It's not immediate.
It's not immediate, correct. I asked that question to Rav Batat when we were learning this. I said, for the Rishonim that say it's the next meal and don't quantify anything more than just the next meal, would they agree night to day? He was like, I haven't seen anyone say so explicitly, but it's really, you'd be hard-pressed to make that case. The coming meal, it's 13 hours away. And now we're dealing with, it's the winter. You could finish dinner on this coming Shabbos. You could finish dinner at 7:30, and that's totally normal. And that's with a Kabbalah Shabbos, and, you know, Kabbalah Shabbos, and some Zmirot and Divrei Torah at your meal. It's not so crazy to finish dinner now at 7:30. Okay? And so let's say you're going to have lunch at 10 o'clock. You know, you're really Israeli, you're going to have 10 o'clock lunch. Okay? That's, like, a long ways away. So the Mishnah Berurah asked that question. He said, what would be, you know, also, can I do borer of dessert before I started my meal? Right? Do I assume that dessert's part of the meal? It's going to have nafkaminas and hilchos brachos. If I assume the dessert's part of the meal or not, do I have to make a separate bracha for dessert or not? If there's cake for dessert, do I have to make a separate mizonot or fruit for dessert? Do I have to make a new ha'etz? That's going to be general questions of how do I relate to dessert? Is that part of the meal? Is it not part of the meal? Okay? And so then, that is going to be part of the discussion. So the Mishnah Berurah basically says, you should not really do so too much before the meal. Right, he says, "Afilu yarich zman asuda kama shoot nikre the altar keman shabrira he samach asuda." Even if the meal is going to be a few hours long, and there's going to be a first course and a second course and a third course, you want to do brera for the main course, and you know that there's going to be a salad course and a fish course and a soup course and a salatim and challah course, and you know whatever. But that's all part of the same suda. That's going to be okay, okay. But then the Mishnah says, "Dal kol banim." Anyhow, it'd be usher to do. You know, until lasot ad yitziat beit hakneset, dibayin et samach lesuda ma'amesh kmo shekato besim. Okay, va'achotchem habetzalim. As he writes when regarding cutting up vegetables, you know what's going to be the definition of miad there. He says when it comes to cutting up, you know, the vegetables for the meal. So he says that would be an hour to 2 hours before the meal. That would be considered karo. Sorry, that would be like a chi of the oraita. He said 1 to 2 hours is going to be way too long. Because that's going to be considered already way too far past the meal. So the Mishnah Berurah is going to say, L'chorah is going to be less than an hour, but you could do within your time before the meal what's necessary throughout for the duration of that meal. Okay? He says, like, if everyone's still in shul, you can't start to prepare lunch. Once people finish shul and start walking home, then you could start to prepare lunch. But, like, shachar starts at 8 o'clock on Shabbos morning, or Minhag America, shachar starts at 9:30 on Shabbos morning. So at 9:30, you can't start to prepare, the Mishnah Berurah would say, for lunch that's only going to start at 1, or for lunch that's going to start a few hours later. Once people leave shul, that's a normal amount of time to start to prepare the meal. But if you know they're in shul for the next 2 hours, that would be a little bit much, the Mishnah Berurah says. Rav Neuvert in the Shmir Shabbos tells us that you really should not do borer, unless it's really Samach Lasuda. And he says, but with Samach Lasuda, you could do everything you need for the meal, even if it's going to be long, right? You're having many courses, or you know, right? You're having a wonderful meal, the entire Midrash has together, and I would find it hard to believe otherwise, but I'm sure when you guys have a meal and the entire Midrash has together, you have Divrei Torah, you have Zmiro, you know, you have a whole group discussion on the Parsha, and, you know, Sugyas and Halacha and Machshava that come out of the Parsha, it's a Leibedik moment as everyone's discussing Divrei Torah and singing Zmiro. The meal is going to take 4 to 5 hours as you go through the Parsha, Be'ion, and have whole discussions on everything. It's going to take a long time to go through the meal. So, can I prepare the different courses? Between every single course, a different group of the girls in the Midrashah make a skit on every Aliyah in the Parsha. right? Or whatever, I don't know, whatever minhagim you guys have to make Shabbos meals wonderful, okay? That means the meal is going to take a long time. The Shemir Shabbos and the Mishnah would say that would be acceptable. Because that, even though it's a long, it's part of the meal. And the Rav Neuver says, even if you invite many people, right? You have a lot of people. Let's say it's your kid's bar mitzvah or a Sheva Brachos or whatever. There's a big meal for a lot of people. A whole family get together, as you asked earlier. So that, Rav Neuver said, that's necessary. Because whatever is necessary for that meal, if your meal is 25 people, the amount of time necessary to prepare it is going to is instinctively going to be different than if it was a 3-person meal, right? The amount of time necessary to prepare a whole bar mitzvah for your community or a Shabbos Sheva Brachos, assuming, I don't know, you could have more than 10 people legally gathered in one room at one point, okay? So that's going to take time. You know, people hire wait staffs of numerous people to prepare, set the tables and place things out, etc. That takes time. That's going to be different than just an immediate family meal of you and, you know, your 2 or 3 friends or you and your spouse and your, you know, 1 or 2 kids or whatever it is. That is going to inherently take less time. Rav Neuwirth points out, for sure, that's going to be part of the subjective discussion in how much time is necessary to prepare for the meal. And that would be called Samach Lasuda, right? Samach Lasuda would include anything for how many people are going to be there, how many courses are there, how much time is it going to take. The definition of Samach Lasuda is obviously going to subjectively change based on who actually participates in the Suda. And this is brought down Rav Moshe and Igros Moshe and Aruch Chaim Chelek Dalid, Siman Ayin Dalid. That's where he has a lot of his Ha'aros on Hilchos Shabbos, a lot of really, really famous small snippets in the Halacha by Rav Moshe on Hilchos Shabbos over there, and the Chutshani and Chelek Bet, Shabbos Chelek Bet, Chaf Hei Dalet, both bring down that there's no time number. There's no number. Oh, it's 23 minutes and 18 seconds. It has nothing to do with time. It has to do with necessary preparation. How much time is it going to take to set up for the amount of people or for the type of meal I'm having? Right? Are you having a one-course meal, right? Often, for example, my wife and I generally, for Friday night, when we don't have guests, Friday night dinner, we'll make a chicken soup with vegetables, and that'll be dinner, right? Everyone gets you have a piece of chicken, you have vegetables, right? Generally, after chicken soup and vegetables, you're not hungry anyhow, between challah and, like, chicken and vegetables, and for all the vegetarians in the room, just assume vegetables, okay? So, right, you're generally, so generally that's what we do. So that's going to affect, but, like, when we're hosting people for Shabbos meals, assuming that was, you know, something we could even discuss have it happening at some point anytime soon, that would be, you know, that changes based on how many people you are, what your meal plan is. That's something that, you know, it fluctuates. So Rav Moshe, Rav Neuver, the Chutshani, Rav Nissim Karelitz, who passed away this past year, pre-corona, points out that really there's no specific amount of time. It's just a practicality of what is necessary to prepare for the meal. Shir la'altar, what do I need? Whereas in Rav Yitzchak Yosef and Yalkut Yosef and his father Rav Avadia and Chazon Avadia both point out that really you need to do everything you can beforehand, even if the meal is going to be a long time. And there's some who say it's a half hour. There's some who say that it's only up to an hour. And really, you should try and be makbid for an hour. So lemaisa, it comes out to be the Shulchan Aruch is like right is taking really. It has to be just for the coming meal. The Ramah is going to say it has to be immediately before the coming meal. Mishnah Berurah is going to take it a step further and say it's only from when people like leave shul. It can't be too much, you know, too early when people are still in shul. Where and then the Shemir Shabbos or Moshe and the Chutshani, it's totally subjective. Of each meal has its own criteria, right? It's also going to affect Lechora based on that opinion. If you have someone who's like overly OCD with how they set up their meal, that would factor in. Okay, this is a question for Rav Yoni and, you know, OCD, mental health, and halacha. We'll discuss that hopefully in a few weeks in the groundbreaking Tshuvos series, Rav Asher Weiss's Tshuva about OCD in halacha. But here, Lechora B'Svara, it definitely would be, according to that opinion, if someone is like meticulous of how they set their table, that would for sure factor in to how one relates to the Shir La'altar. And Rav Avadia Yalkut Yosef bring down, really, there's no say it's an hour, but best to be makbid for only a half hour. Yeah, any questions till now? Did we answer all your questions, or is there anything?
I was just wondering about what the case is if you also have to do, like, for Mishnah Berurah, like, if you also have to you have a certain amount of time, but what if, is that enough? assuming it's different for other emotions. Like, I'm guessing for Tolkien, for example, you might have more time because...
Well, it depends on how you relate to it, but it's definitely going to be different per malachot. But as you'll see on the Makoros here, I brought the Mishnah Berurah from Shin Kaf Aleph, because there he compares the two, and he says, well, based on what we said in Hilchos Berurah, I can learn from here. As in, there is overlap, but there's also differences.
Right, so what if you have to do Berurah before you do Tolkien? Like, you have to
peel the eggs before you could cut them up into the egg salad,
yes.
I would hope.
Yes.
Unless you're like really makbid on your protein from the eggshells. But... let's assume you're normal and that's not the case. Yeah. So that's part of the natural preparation of the meal.
Right. So what about if you have a lot of veggies to cut?
Okay.
And you have like, I don't know, the ends to cut off. So if you have like, you only...
It's not cutting off the ends. It's, I'm cutting off the middle. Right, it's not that I don't want the edge of it. I don't want the, like, the green stub of the carrot. It's I really want that carrot.
Right. Wait, so would you have more time? Like, because when you're cutting them, you know it's going to take more than 4 hours to cut all these veggies because you're cutting a lot of veggies.
So then you probably should have done that on Erev Shabbos.
Fair. But you didn't, and now 10 guests just showed up unexpectedly.
So then you could do it. You should always, I can say for myself, I almost always try and, I always wash the lettuce, I cut lettuce before Shabbos. For a long time I cut vegetables for salad before Shabbos as well. Until my wife really didn't want me to keep doing so, she really preferred to cut the cucumbers and peppers for salad and stuff some right before the meal instead of before, because it apparently keeps them crunchier, I don't know, but apparently that's a thing. So, but I generally try, you know, washing lettuce for sure, I always do before Shabbos. We'll get to that in a little bit. Washing lettuce on Shabbos.
It's 10 guests. Rav Bigler, all 17 of us show up at your door after Shabbos has started.
Okay.
Like, we really want some salad tomorrow morning. And we're going to eat a lot of it. So you know it's going to take you at least 4 hours to cut all these veggies. So that's...
I guarantee you that for the 17 of you, it won't take me 4 hours to cut veggie for salad.
Let's just say there were
you're
more
really
of us, okay?
Okay? You guys are more than welcome to walk. I mean, now you're not invited. But in general, if it wasn't Corona, you're all more than welcome to walk over on Shabbos. Machlok at how you hold regarding Tchum. The Rav Ben Shlomo, the father of the Rav of the Shul that we are currently in, holds for sure there's no problem with Tchum. You guys can all walk over, no problem at all. Others, Shalvim, right down the road. So it's about a 40-minute walk. What?
2 miles? Oh, wait, you don't know miles, do you?
I have no idea. It's about a 40-minute walk. Depending on red lights, it's anywhere between a 5 and 8 minute drive.
Is it a safe walk?
Yeah, totally. So if it wasn't for Corona, you're more than welcome to walk over. If you were to all show up and say, hey, we're here, we really want salad.
No, we'll show up after candlelighting.
Okay.
And we're going to say, tomorrow morning, we are coming for lunch.
You would walk there, all 17 of you, to say we're coming for lunch.
Okay,
because
one of us spend time going with you. We're in town.
Point is, yeah, no, that was... So I wouldn't start at night. I wouldn't start, I mean, mazel tov on all the families.
You start early in the morning.
But I would, as in, yeah, because even though the Mishnah Berurah says you shouldn't do so when people are at shul, but the Mishnah Berurah would agree in a case where that's the only way possible, I'll be like Rav Moshe, the Shmir Shabbos, the Chuchani, that's called preparing for the meal, right? If it's not Samach Lesuda, the way we reframe its definition, according to, right, Rav Moshe, Rav Neuvert, the Chuchani, three of the greatest Ashkenazi poskim of the last 100 years, all really point out that the definition is not samach lesuda al pi a quantitative amount of time, but based on a necessary, you know, a requirement of preparing the meal, making sure you have what's necessary. And so if you were to show up at my door, at, you know, right before Vasikan and say, hey, we're coming for lunch at 11, then I would say, okay, and we'll have to figure out what we have to do, etc. But... that would definitely be, you know, depending. So Rav Ovadia, even in that case, Rav Ovadia might agree. He's going to say, yeah, really, it's a half hour to an hour. But if you have a situation where the only option is to start earlier, that's what's necessary. That would be called miyad, because that's what it takes to prepare the meal. Okay, let's continue. Yeah. It's a great question. I don't know for I wouldn't say this psak lalacha without, you know, discussing with others first. For the Rambam lechora, for sure, because the Rambam says anything between 1 to 3 hours is only an iser derabanan. So in a case where we'd only be dealing with this is the, as in generally we seem to say it's either mutar lechatchila or asher dioraita. The Rambam gives us this gray area of 1 to 3 hours that's going to be an iser derabanan. So if I accept the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, so then for sure I would say, because it's only an Isra Darabanan to start a little bit earlier, even though that means you'd have this downtime, I would probably be I would be noted to be Mako. Depending on some of the other opinions, maybe not, but it would be every case, right? There's no any issue with mental health and things like that. There's no real black and white. Every single case is so unique and different, right? Everyone has their own little tendencies and triggers and things that, you know, are good for them or bad for them. So you'd have to, for sure, speak to the person and see what, you know, each case, kol mikra legufo, judge each case on its own. But no, it's a great question. I don't know all regal achad. I'd have to think about it a little more. But for the Rambam, definitely there's space to say so. I could argue that potentially for the Igros Moshe and for the Shmir Shabbos and the Chuchani, that would be true as well. Because having that, like, half hour menuchas and nefesh, it's not just like, you know, you're taking a half hour to just sit there and sip some tea and just chill. It's without that, you won't function as a host. You won't be able to have, like, normal conversation with other people at the table. So that would be considered part of, like, preparing for the meal. But as in, it's a question of how, is it like without that you're going to be, like, you literally won't be able to function?
No, it's not that you'd be an emotional wreck, but just, like, you will be more on edge and it may be less pleasant.
So that'd be Colin McCurley Guffone. For sure.
How many people, like, what's the calculation here? But, like,
if it's a husband who's displeasing his wife, it's even worse.
Why? Good.
Yeah, for sure. You don't need a source for things that are just logic. This is just like psychology of human beings. Whatever. It's a great question. I don't really have a good answer and source off the top of my head, but definitely the different opinions will factor in how much we weight on it. But each case, you know, the severity of that anxiety will for sure relate to different things differently. Okay, let's continue. Now we're going to ask a question. This goes back to your a little bit, you know, impractical and absurd case before with your 1,000 dum-dums and 1 dum-dum of the opposite flavor. Okay?
Not 1,000.
Whatever. Let's go with the 1,000 case. Sometimes it's easier to understand when things are exaggerated. Okay? You have like an obsession with dum-dums. You bought the 1,000 pack and they were all root beer except for 1 green apple. And it's in a perfect box and that 1 green apple is stuck in the middle. Well, there, that's a better case. I don't know if green apple is just green apple. It's like there's a special place everyone has for green apple.
Yes!
Whatever. Okay. The question we want to deal with now is, what's going to be the case if I have a situation where, generally we say you have to take the good from the bad. You have to take ochel me'apsola, right? What would be the case when you have a ton of ochel and very, very little psola, right? You have 5 kilo of peanuts, and mixed within, there's like 4 peanut shells that are all sitting there at the top staring you in the face. And you don't want to put them on the table in front of, you have enough guests to justify your 5 kilo of peanuts, none of whom are allergic to peanuts, because you asked in advance, like a responsible host should and would and could, okay? So can you pluck out the 4 or 5 shells, or do you have to go through the back-breaking effort of plucking out all 5 kilo of peanuts to then leave the 4 shells behind?
Under the
But you have enough people, they're going to eat them all. You're like hosting a tish for like 1,000 chassidim.
Yeah, but by the time they get to the bottom, they'll think that they've just been sloppy and dropped some in or reflect badly on you as a host.
Okay. I mean, the better question is, why is Faiga hosting a tish for 1,000 chassidim? But that's a, I guess that's a more...
It doesn't look like normal. We're beyond that already.
I think it's
what?
Weird. That's completely normal. We've gone past that.
Okay.
You don't think...
I have a stadium in my backyard.
I mean, yeah. On this note, don't say... It was my wife's year at seminary, or the year before her. One of the girls dressed up as a chassid, right? She curled her hair as payas, whatever. Wore a bechsha and a shrayma, went to my asharim, and she got dragged into a circle of chassidim dancing. And she's like freaking out. I can't tell them that I'm a girl, but I also can't like stay here. And was like in this like moment of tension of what do I do? And she's wearing a bechsha to the floor. It's like a dress. I don't actually know, you know.
I, you got
no.
A great story.
Yeah.
Oh
it's,
my god.
Point is, I don't know why that time out, because Faiga's hosting a tish.
We can't do that.
Well, if she's hosting a tish, no one's dancing, sitting at the head. But yeah.
Wait, okay, so I know that the punishment for breaking Shomer is.
We're not discussing that now. Talk to Brooke after. No, I'm saying
they didn't know. Do they? Is the onus on them?
It's a great question. We're not. Right now, we're like in Boder. That was like a tangential story. I don't know. Because that's just how my brain works. But yeah. Okay, let's continue.
Your brain's like a Gemara. You should be so honest.
But broken and out of order? Yes. I've said this a bunch of times. Gemara is like ADD, ADHD, and the Rambam's OCD. It's like each sefer has its own mental classifications. Point is.
Keep going. It's like the depression sefer and the anxiety sefer.
Depression is Kohelet. Okay, that's fair.
Okay. So the question we want to ask is, as we discussed just now, what is going to be the definition on can I have a situation where I can then, can I remove the five shells in order to save the obsessive, you know, amount of work that going through all 5 kilo of nuts will be? So the Ramban brings this down in his Chidushim al Shas in Shabbos Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph. And he says that according to Rabbah, if anyone does Borer of less than a shear, there's no Chiyav. Right? So just like if you cook less than a shear, you're not Chayav. Okay, so he says if you only separate a little amount, that would never be called separating. So according to Rava, taking out just two or three shells out of this huge mixture, it's seemingly irrelevant. That would be fine. But according to Shmuel in the Gemara, according to Rav Yosef in the Gemara, it wouldn't matter. It's going to be usher no matter what. The Torah actually quotes this opinion, la halacha. The Torah actually holds that if it would be more efficient and it would be less effort to remove the bad, and that would be much significantly easier for you, right? Imyesh torech, if there's a lot of, there's tircha, there's this like, this agony, there's a lot of stress and effort needed to be borer, the good from the bad, and just taking out the bad would be so simple and easy. The Mishnah, the Torah says, right, imyesh yoter torech, bebreat apsolek, yon shudak, notel et ha'ochel, umeniach, oh sorry, it's the flip side, right? So in the case, it would be, if that's significantly easier to remove the bad from the good, the Torah would say that's acceptable. This is really not accepted, the halacha, on Shabbos, right? Because we said before, you have to always take the ochel. But there are those who want to be mitzarif, this sheet of the Torah, maybe there's a space, there's place to say this on Yontif, because there's a machloka right on Yontif, you're allowed to do Michael Nefesh, things that are necessary for your meal, you're allowed to do on Yontif. So there's those who want to say, maybe we could be somech on the sheet of the Torah, that if it's a Yontif meal and you want to just take out the few bad from a lot of good, that maybe we could be mitzarif the Torah, plus the concept of maybe there's no brera on Yontif, and combine the two, even though neither are generally paskin halacha, combine the two on Yontif as a tzeruf lahakel. But that's a different discussion, not really, that's more of a Yontif discussion. But at least on Shabbos, the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah both hold that you cannot do this. Right? The Shulchan Aruch says if you do this, you're chayev. And the Ramah says that's true, even if it's so much easier to remove the psolet, you can't do that. The Be'er Halacha discusses this at length. The Be'er Halacha was the like elongated version of the Mishnah Berurah written by the Chavetz Chaim, and the Be'er Halacha explains the Ramban Ritva and Mahari Abu Lafia. This is like a famous machlok at Mahari Abu Lafia versus the Mahari Tzahalon, a famous really long Be'er Halacha about the machlok between them two, Mahari A versus the Mahari Tzah. Okay, Ramban Mahari Abu Lafia and the Ritva say it would be mutter like the Torah to separate the little bit of psolot out of the ton of good, but the Rosh, Maharitza alone, Shulchan Aruch, Egle Tal, Kafachayim, Shvitat Shabbat, Chazon Ish, Mishnah Berurah, all say it's Aser. Okay? the Chazon Ish in his Ha'aros arguing with the Mishnah Berurah on a lot of issues, but here specifically in Or HaChaim Nun Dalet Aleph, he disagrees with the understanding of the Mishnah Berurah on the Ramban. And he wants to say that Ramban was only matir in a case where the person already had the food in his mouth, right? What if I put an entire chicken wing in my mouth, and now I want to use my hands to pull out the bone? So the Chazon Ish says, that's the case that Ramban's talking about. So once the food's in your mouth, you could pull out the psolet with your hands because it's already in your mouth, that's fine. But that's not what the Ramban's, that's not how the Mishnah Berurah, that's not how we understood the Ramban. That's just the debate in how we understand the Ramban. Is it specifically the Chazon Ish wants to say it's only once the food's already in your mouth, then there's room to be to say that the Ramban holds that. But generally, we really do not accept this opinion in the Torah and the Ramban and the Ritva Maria Bilavia. The Shmir Shabbos says that, in general, on this discussion, if you're eating, let's say, meat, and there's a bone, or fish, and there's some scales or small bones in it, you really should, you can't remove the bone or the scales, because then you would be borer psolet mitochocha, right? You can't take the skin off the fish, you have to take the fish off the skin. So, that's what really you should do. And then you put, but what if the skin is on the fish and you can't pull it off? Or, right, sometimes, you know, fish, there's like those little annoying bones, the ones that the Gemara says, like, you're going to choke on and die. I mean, Metzias also dictates that that happens. Generally, you don't die because there's a thing called the Heimlich maneuver. Legally, you're not allowed to call it the Heimlich maneuver because the family of Heimlich sued, I don't know who, for using their name without rights. What?
I think it would be good publicity. Slapping them really hard on the back is...
Okay, so point is, we say L'chatchila Shmir Shabbos... The Shmir Shabbos points out, L'chatchila, you should put the food in your mouth and then spit out the psolet. But he says, you know, b'shat etchak, if you really need to, you know, it's really uncomfortable. You could pull out the bat on your, once it's on your plate, you're pulling it out with your fork or your hand on your plate, that's samach l'achila. I wasn't sure, what is the, right, when I have the food in my mouth, and now I am pulling the bone out of my mouth, or taking the scales out of my mouth, why would that be mutter? At the end of the day, I'm taking the food, the psolet, out of the food. So I asked this question to Vita Verbaim. Rav Lieber wanted to say that that's not called Doruch Borer. Once it's in your mouth, no one does, when he says Borer, the definition of Borer was to put things away in your storehouse, right? You're doing a lot of it to put things away for storage, right? You're hiding acorns for the winter type of thing. You're going through all your grain to store up for the winter. So that's not called Borer. Whereas in Rav Gidon Ben Yamin said, no, it's called Derech Achila, right? Normally, when people like eat chicken wings, they like put it in the mouth. They, you know, you're like holding the wing, unless you're one of these people who eat chicken wings with a fork and knife, and then l'chaim for that. But point is, the way people generally eat is you have the chicken wing and you pull out the bone, right? Or you eat the meat off the bone, really. But some people, they put the whole thing in the mouth, they slide out the bone, type of thing, or the fish, and you pull the bones out of your mouth. That's how people eat. So Rav Lieber wants to say it's not derech borer. That's not called a maisa of separation. Whereas Rav Gidon said, no, that's just how, that's part of eating. So that's why the Shmir Shabbos says, like, depends on where you are. If you're like at a meal, like you're all sitting, and if you're like at a meal, like amongst like the entire Midrashah, no one cares, right? No one judges each other on how they eat. Unless it's like that one person's like, your elbows are on the table, I'm going to like throw a napkin at you. But napkin? That's like the least aggressive thing.
I'm kidding. But
that
sounds gross.
Right, so that's what Shmir Shabbos basically says, right? That, you know, Gam Elo Hanoagim Lakel Lotziata Adarot Mina Dag Yeshlem Al Milismoth Vuaz Sheyasu Ken Mamish Bishat Achila Velo Lofnechen, right? When you do it on your plate, he says there's those who say that's called Shas Achila, and, you know, there's room to be make al pizza. Yeah. On Shabbos or in general?
In general, do you just like pick it up and take a bite, or?
And generally, I cut it open and.
Anyway, on Shabbos.
Great. Okay.
Silence.
My wife would say like it's a really bad idea to ask me etiquette questions on like how I eat food. It's probably a really bad idea.
As in, like, if you eat chicken wings like this, yeah. Yeah, I was thinking you're like, or you're one of those people who eats it with a fork and knife.
Or you eat the green part first.
Okay, but here's the thing. I can't think. Either you pluck the seeds out before you put it in your mouth, or you spit the seeds out after it's in your mouth.
Here we're saying,
you could use a fork and knife to separate it, but they're small enough that what you would just be doing is like,
or just eat the seeds and pretend it's spicy.
And then you like then you have that like fear as a child that you're going to grow watermelon in your
I never
stomach.
Had that fear as a very smart child.
I don't know, like sure. You're I think every child has that issue.
A child who read books written by people who as kids had had that fear talking about how that wasn't real, so I
So the point is, with watermelon, Baruch Hashem in Eretz Yisrael, and I believe in America also, the vast majority of watermelons are grown without black seeds anymore. Thank you, genetic engineering. Okay, that's one. Two, generally, the ideal thing would be to eat it and spit out the black seeds. But if, like, for some reason you can't do that because, like, you're dining with the queen, okay, then you could, I mean, I don't know if the queen eats watermelon, but, I don't know. But, okay, so is it a fruit? I mean, they're seeds, so I guess it's a fruit. And they're seeds, it's a fruit. Yeah, it's fruit. Point is, but yeah, no, so ideally the Shmir Shabbos is saying you should eat it and spit out the black seeds. But B'Shad Etchal, like, if you feel like, you know, that's really not acceptable based on your social cues at the moment, don't ask me for tips on social cues. But point is, then, you know, the Shmir Shabbos says you could, in theory, when it's on your plate, there's room, you know, you could say when it's on your plate, that's called Shat Achila as well, and there's room to accept that. Rav Yitzchak Yosef points out in the Alkot Yosef that one can remove the tiny bones when it's on their plate, because that's the way people eat, right? When you have a piece of fish on your plate, people like, you know, kind of like poke it with their finger first to make sure there's no bones, they're going to choke and die. I don't know if people actually poke their fish. I would not do that. But because you look weird poking fish.
Oh, well, if you look weird, then obviously you'd rather the person die.
Okay, and the Alkot Yosef says that's true with, you know, removing chicken skins or scales from fish, exact same. And the Menuchat Ava points out that really you should not allow people to remove the scales and bones from their plate. And, you know, really you should only do so in your mouth, but if there's another Sneif Lahakel, such as potentially, you know, Kavod HaBriot, etc., then there's room to be mikel, but really the Menuchat Ava says we really should not allow this. Yeah.
Okay. So what about if you're making cucumber salad? And has seeds, by the way. Is that a fruit too?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything that has seeds is a fruit.
A bird is a fruit.
I don't get that. Okay. Let's continue.
That's very funny, actually.
Great. Okay. Let's continue.
Wait. Okay.
Yeah. We're going to discuss cucumber peelers.
But you just don't need it right now.
So there's a whole thing here in the Mar Makomo sheet. I don't know which page are we on. We have that on page, well, for me, page 40. For you, I don't know what page it is. We're going to get to peelers. We were planning to get to peelers tonight, but with the amount of tangents we've taken, that's not going
to
happen. I think I do that enough on my own to overcompensate for everyone else. What?
Impressive.
What do you say?
The number of people present, the amount of tangents has truly been
impressive.
Also,
this is such a
fun. Also, while we're doing this, we talked about because the whole idea is strange.
Talk to Abigail about Erev Tafshilin. That's her, like, specialty, no?
We just discussed it.
Great.
Didn't you have, like, an obsession of Erev Tafshilin, Rambam, and Erevin, Rabbi Ginsburg?
It's because...
Rabbi Ginsburg. And the Rambam. Well, people are trying to do it like matzah and hard-boiled eggs.
It doesn't make sense.
We're not discussing that now. We're going to get back to it, Tarshir. I want to get through this next sugya over the next 10 minutes. So let's buckle our seatbelts and start to go. Famous case. What happens when a fly falls into your soup or your cup of whatever you're drinking? Let's just go with soup. Okay? Because we're in Amudim and there's the soup lady who everyone's obsessed with. Kosher, not kosher, sickly run out of Migdal, who knows? Okay? But point is, okay?
I have an
yeah.
It's so you eat it.
We're leaving kosher's questions aside on bugs in your soup. But perfect. But right, this is what happens when your dad gives you a day shear for, I don't know, probably since before I was born. I don't know if that's true or not. But
is that actually true?
I have no idea. But he has shear on all these things in your day. Really frustrating, really hard sugya. I wanted to listen to a shir on Chazara. I think I told you this. I opened up his shir on the sugya. It was very confusing. And he opens up and he goes, "This is a really hard sugya. Hopefully we'll understand it together." And then I was just like, I officially quit. I officially just like, when that's like, that's not what I was looking for right now. I was like, please explain it to me in a way that I can understand. And then I was like, I don't get it either. This is really hard. I was like, so I guess I'm not, like, alone in this one. But point is, okay? But yeah, for Beria, right? Simon Kuf Aleph in your Rodea, Dine Beria. If it is a whole bug, it's not Batel, right? A whole bug's not Batel, Afila Be'elef. That is our problem, potentially, with the soup lady, or buying lettuce, or any other vegetables that are mukhzak to have bugs in them, salads, etc.
Wait, so if you cut it in two with your spoon, yes.
Well, then you're killing it in a Shabbat.
Well, it's already drowned in the... It's already... Well, then you have questions of Bittul Issur L'Chatchila. Whatever. We're not discussing kashrus now. We're getting back to Hilchos Borer. We could have a shiur on Dine, Breira, Bittul Issur L'Chatchila. Okay? Right? Gemara, end of the second parak of Mako. Second parak of Mako, right, very end of the daf. We also came up in Daf Yomi a few days ago. Right? Every single bug is anywhere between 4 to 6 Issur D'Oraita for each bug. So your Issur D'Oraita versus protein balance is really high. Okay? Whatever. Leave me on the side. So what happens when I have a bug that falls into my soup? Okay? On Hilchos Shabbos alone, I want to remove the bug from my soup because Dine Birya in Hilchos Kashrus, if it's a Birya, we don't play by Batel B'Shishim so long as I can remove the Birya, the whole fly, as its entire entity. Then, even if there was less than shishim, it's going to be mutter because I have removed the entire being as it is. Okay? So I want to remove the fly from my soup because I'm not interested in all of those isurei d'oraita. I don't want to die in purgatory forever. Okay? Or
die in purgatory
I can't die, whatever. Okay? So the question is then brought up. The Taz in Shinya Tetzayin Zion in Steve Katan Yudimel tells us that the Ravitz says it's usur if a bug falls into your soup or your cup, you cannot take it out. You can't take the fly out on its own because that would be removing psola from ochel, right? Your cup is juice or soup, and you want to remove the fly, that would be taking psola from ochel, that would be forbidden. So he says, Ela yikach min hamashke ktzat imahem, right? You take your spoon, you take the fly, and you scoop up a little bit of, you take the fly with the soup that surrounds it. That would be okay, the Taz says in the name of the Ravid, because then you did not take the good from the bad. You are taking a spoonful of soup. Oh my God, it happens to me there's a fly there. I'm going to take this entire spoonful and casually throw it in the sink, feed it to the dog, whatever you prefer to do.
Feed it to the dog?
Yeah. You have a question? Or
soup to a dog. Can you just do that in any situation? Or is it fly soup?
Yeah, that's it. We're going to see. This is like the debate, but it can apply to a lot of other things. That's why this is such a... That's what I want to try and get it. The Prima Gadim, over there in the Mishpetet HaZahav, right, in his commentary, Prima Gadim, wrote commentaries on the major Nos HaKelim. Generally, it's play on words, right? On the Taz, the Torah Zav, he wrote the Mishpetet HaZahav. On the Magin Avram, he wrote the Eshel Avram. And on the Shach, the Sifte Kohen, he wrote the Sifte Das. Okay? So he always has, you know, he has plays on words, right? Svaram on the Nos HaKelim. So the Prima Gadim writes that according to everyone, it's going to be forbidden to remove psola from food. But even when you want to eat immediately. But when I take it with some liquid, when I take the fly with some of the soup in it, then that's not going to be brer up solet. Rather, I'm removing some of the food with it. And thus, I'm borer, right? This is going to be, he wants the premier, going back to our original sugya, what could be a case of borer kol ayom ve'eno mischayev? So the Prima Gadim says, maybe that Sugya Yerushalmi was referring to this case. You take the bad, but you take the bad with the good, so you're not really doing borer. And thus, you're removing your fly all day long, but you've yet to do a Maisa Borer because you took the fly with the soup with it. That's the Taz, I'll be the Ravid, and the explanation of the Prima Gadim Mishpetet HaZahav. The Balatanya, the Alter Rebbe, right? He wrote the Shulchan Aruch HaRav when he was 21 years old. Yes, he wrote a commentary on all four Chalakim of 21 years old. I guess you guys have the next 2 years or so to write a commentary on the entire Shulchan Aruch. Three. Great. Okay? I'm just like really far behind on this one. So he wrote later on in his life, when he was in his 70s, he wrote a commentary on the Siddur. So generally, when there's a machloket between his commentary on the Siddur and his Shulchan Aruch HaRav, we hold like the Siddur because he wrote it much later on in his life. So the Alter Rebbe, Rav Shneur Zalman of the Adi, the Baal Tanya wrote that you should actually spill out the entire cup so that the fly comes out as you're pouring, and then it would be allowed. So what do I do? Instead of taking a spoon and scooping part of it out, I pour at a very slow angle so that the fly and some of the soup pours out. So it's not that I take with my hand a spoon and I scoop out the fly plus soup. Rather, I pour it casually out of the edge of the cup. That is the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch
HaRav. Wait, but that doesn't work. Okay, let's say you have like a glass of water, and or like a bowl of water, and you have it has some ice in it, and you try to pour it out, the ice all goes to the other side. What's going to happen is you're just going to pour it all as you
I don't know. I don't play with like bug and water mixtures too often. Ask like a fourth grade guy at like science camp. He probably can give you a better answer.
Guy at science camp.
I hear that. I don't know. So,
that person.
I don't know. You're asking a question. I have no idea of like. It'll also vary depending on the viscosity of the food that you're dealing with. That's definitely going to be. I don't know. It's a good question. I have no idea. The Mishnah Berurah and the Bir Halacha and the Mishnah Berurah both bring down that you cannot remove the fly from the cup, but the Mishnah Berurah holds like the Taz. You could remove a little bit of the liquid with the fly. Okay? Mishnah Berurah is holding like the Taz. The Mishnah Berurah then takes it a step further, and he adds. And he says that if you remove the fly, whether it's by hand or by kli, that's Borer Psolet Me'ochel. But the minute I remove the fly with a bit of food, that's going to be fine, because then it's I'm taking Ochel and Psolet, I'm not doing a Maisa Borer.
But wait, who said this?
The Mishnah Berurah.
And you don't have to spill it out, you can just take a spoon like a normal.
Similar to the Taz, B'Shem L'Ravid, and the Primi Gadim.
Okay?
The Chazon Ish. What? Shulchan Aruch HaRav.
I don't like the one where you pour it.
Yeah.
The bowl.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Go write an angry letter.
He's been dead for like. I mean, I guess if you're really Chabad, he's not dead. I don't know. It's a good question. Maybe that's just the seventh Rebbe. I don't know how it applies retroactively to the first. But, yeah. Okay. Guys, let's continue. Okay? The Chazon Ish strongly disagrees with this Mishnah Berurah. This is a famous machloket Mishnah Berurah Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish says, this whole heter of the Taz, where I take a spoon and I take the fly plus the soup, is totally not acceptable. Right? Why? Because the Mishnah Berurah and the Taz and the Ravid are saying, what is the definition of Borer? It's plucking the fly out of the soup. So the minute I take the little bit of soup that's around the fly, plus the fly inside of it, that is going to be totally acceptable. I didn't do Borer. The Chazon Ish disagrees. Says, how do I know it's Borer? Because I now have a flyless bowl of soup. I have a bowl of soup that's totally edible. I have a wonderful cup of orange juice with no flies in it. How delicious. Okay? The Chazon Ish says, the maise of tikkun ha-ma'achal, the minute I now have a perfectly non-mixed food or bowl, that is going to be totally forbidden. So the Mishnah Berurah says, I zoom in. I did not separate the fly from the soup that directly touches Mr. Fly. I scooped that out as a whole and I threw it out. That's fine. Whereas the Chazon Ish says, no. I look at the picture of what's going on in my bowl. Right now I have a bowl of soup with a fly. Regardless of how I take it out, I now have a perfect bowl of soup that has no Isser karet fold, you know, many isurim full of bugs. Okay? So the Chazon Ish says that's really going to be a problem. And also, more than that, when I take a spoon and I happen to perfectly scoop out the fly with a little bit of soup, wow, you're so talented. That's a giloy das. That shows your kavana was just to remove the fly. Right? When that's the first scoop you take, happens to be that, you're admitting, you're showing the world, this is what I'm trying to do. And rather, he says you should pour the cup in half, right? This is, I guess, he's accepting Brooks Ha'ara on the Matzias of the viscosity of flies, okay? He's going to say, take the bowl, pour half of it into the other one, and that's going to be fine. And now I still have a bowl of soup that has a fly, and I have a bowl of soup that doesn't have a fly, and I can eat the other one, okay? This is the fundamental debate between the Mishnah Berurah and the Chazon Ish. How on earth are we going to deal with this? Do I look at the whole tarovet, the picture of the bowl as a whole, and either I fix that or I didn't fix that? That's the discussion in the Chazon Ish. Or do I look at the Mishnah Berurah? What did I do currently? Rav Neuvert holds halakha l'maaseh in the Shemir Shabbos that you cannot remove it by hand. You can't pluck it out. But if you take it with if the fly is alive, he says it's not a mixture. So long as the fly is alive, the Shemir Shabbos says, that's not called a tarovet because it's going to fly out on its own. In theory, if it's alive, you can do whatever you want. Try not to kill it because that would be an Isser D'oraita of Netilat Neshama and also just Achzari. You try not to kill things or people. And as a result, so if it's alive, it's not going to be a tarovet. But if it's dead, then you can't just blow it out. Can I just blow it over the side? Right? You just give it like a Well, I mean, it doesn't work when you're wearing a mask, but let's say you're not wearing a mask and you're in post-corona times or pre-corona times.
You're eating soup, so you can't be wearing a mask.
You have, like, one of those little slits. The one, I mean, there's everyone's going to eat. I don't know. Whatever. Okay? So he says that really you can't blow it out or just swat it out. But he says you can blow it to the side of the bowl and then pour it, right? It's right now in the middle of the bowl. I could kind of blow it so it's at the edge. And then when I pour a little bit from the lip, it'll fall immediately. That's going to be acceptable. Unless Brooke says that Mattia says that doesn't work. I don't know.
Work.
And he said, but he says, halacha l'maaseh, you can be somech on the, on the taz, the Mishnah Berurah, to take it out with a little bit of a spoon and a little bit of soup, that's fine. So too holds the Igros Moshe. The Rav Yimon writes that really the Minhag Olam, we make it like the Mishnah Berurah. But he says, really, if you give me Machmir, best to do it in a way that the Chazon Ish would also accept it. So really, you shouldn't just do one scoop, one like little bowl, spoonful of soup plus fly. But if you take like a ladle or a big soup and it's nicker that you're trying to take soup, not just the fly, that would be the best thing to do. That's what Rav Batadal said. Rav Avadia holds Lemaisa that if the fly is floating on top, you can even remove it by hand or with a spoon, and that's not called Borer. When the fly is floating on top, Rav Avadia holds, that's not Borer at all. You could just pluck it out. But he says there's those who say that you should take some food with it, and really we should be machmir to do that as such, but this only works if the psoal is floating on top. But if it's at the bottom, then that's going to be a problem. And the reason Rav Avadia holds like this is because Rav Avadia says there's no such concept as borer belach. Once you have like liquids and solids, they're inherently separate. So the fly floating on top of the liquid soup or the cup of juice is not going to ever be considered a tarovet. And the Menuchat Ahava holds like the Chazon Ish. So to summarize, we have this debate. How do I remove a fly? There is a fundamental debate on how we look at it. Do I look at it as I am removing the fly from a tarovet, or do I view it as I am coming to simply be metaking my bowl? I'm trying to perfect my mixture. Halakha L'maisa, Taz, Ravid, Mishnah Berurah, Shmirah Shabbos, Rav Moshe, the Orcho Shabbos, Rav Rimon, Mikar Hadin, and Rav Avadia L'chumra, say you hold like the Mishnah Berurah, just scoop it out with some soup. Rav Rimon and Rav Batat say we should be machmir to try and take out some, you know, a significant amount to be machmir for the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish would say you can't just take it out with a spoon because that's called fixing the food. Similarly, as how the Menuchat Ahava also holds. So rather, you should pour out, make it half and half, and then it's not nicker that you are fixing it. That is really, hopefully next week. Next week, we're, Bezrat Hashem, we are going to finish the discussions. Hopefully, I hope to cover a little more today, but Beseder, next week we are going to Bezrat Hashem. We're going to move a little faster and try and cover a lot of the little halacha l'maaseh stuff. What about removing stickers from challahs? What about peeling fruits and vegetables? Washing fruits and vegetables? Tea bags and the like? Brita filters and different pitchers? That's what we're going to discuss next week. Tonight we really covered the concept of the altar. We discussed a little bit of the idea of how do I take a fly out of my soup? And we also discussed can I take out a little bit of the psulit from the alot of food and from a lot of food. And Bezrat Hashem, next week we'll finish up with a lot more of the halakha l'maaseh topics.